Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
As we get ready for the upcoming Olympic Games in Tokyo, there's been so much focus on the qualifying events here. Who's going to be a part of these teams? Today, we got a definite answer of someone who will not be part of a certain team. But the why is where it gets interesting. Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Hoping to talk to some coming up here soon. We will talk to Richard Shea of Major League Eating about the upcoming Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest that yours truly will be on the call for on Sunday. Very excited to be back in the booth for that one. But Mike Golic Jr., Randy Scott in for Janae Aguimike today. And Randy, we've spent a lot of today. I mean, listen, we can call it what it is. Sports talk radio doesn't spend an overwhelming amount of time diving into track and field and the things that happen in that sport. Normally, when we get to the Olympics, it's a different story. We all, you know, wrap ourselves in the flag and do that. But what we've had go on today here, as for anyone that's missed it here, Sha'Carri Richardson is a U.S. track and field athlete. She is 21 years old, and she was seen by many people to be the favorite to go and maybe win us a gold medal in the 100 meters over in Tokyo. And people were very excited about that. She got great hair, great personality, the overall vibe. She was exciting. It was starting to get to that point where we're really feeling the buildup of all this. We got the announcement today that she is accepted and will serve a one-month suspension for violating the drug policy, the policy referring here in the to her testing positive for marijuana. Mm-hmm. And so, Randy, this is kind of, I won't necessarily call it what feels like a culture war in this spot, but it does feel like generations kind of pushing up against each other, because on one side, you've got a lot of people that we've seen, the groundswell of support for marijuana use in this country here, the legalization of it in so many states, versus the people that look at this and say, she knew the rules going into this. She should have been aware of them. She should have followed them. And if not, she serves this penalty now, knowing full well what happened here. And we've tried to kind of find some connective tissue in that. It's been a bit difficult today.
The support of a bad rule, the support of an outdated rule, the support of an antiquated rule, doesn't make it any better of a rule. You know, I mean, I feel like that's a fair way to view this. And if there's anything that could point to how rules can change and how quickly the foundation stays intact, look at the NIL. I mean, nothing burned to the ground overnight. It hasn't been the loss of X program or Y program. Like, life goes on. Sports go on as we know them. We can continue to love it, no matter whether, you know, the starting offensive tackle is going to make a little extra money on the side. Like, that's so and you say that to make the point as it pertains to Sha'Carri, where does she represent the United States in a worse way after the news of her positive test? And I think that says more about you if you feel that way than it does about her, than it does about U.S. track and field, than it does about Team USA at the Olympic Games. You know, it says more about you as a fan than it does about the overall experience or the athlete herself here.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the point we've found ourselves coming back to, is she has represented herself, Sha'Carri. And if you haven't seen her, she was on, you know, I believe the Today Show this morning talking about this and took full accountability, owned every part of this. Like, if you are looking to show your children what accountability looks like, she is the one to show. Yeah. And so this really hasn't been about her. It's been about everyone around who's come in after this and either rallied on the side of the rule. Like you said, I saw someone, I think it was Spencer Hall, said people that point to the sign. People that point to the sign and say, this is what it is. You follow the sign.
Right.
Versus in what we've also seen, people that are saying, this is a bad rule. Why are we letting this rob us of watching this person compete in this spot? And I understand accountability, and so does she. So that's why I think we're all acknowledging that, yes, she knew the rule. She said as much. And this was in response to grief. This is in response to pain. But she still said she knew, and she's accepting the responsibility and the consequences that come with that. But can it not also be a time for reflection here? Are we not at a point where, as you brought up, the very state that this qualifier she did took place in, you can legally smoke marijuana. You can legally use THC in that space. These cannabinoids that are banned by the World Anti-Doping Association that the USADA falls under, all these things for the Olympics. Yeah. Does that not at least say, all right, we're thinking differently enough about this in key spots that we should have a conversation?
The conversation began with the news of this positive test. And the conversation's not going to progress, because we don't do that as a fan base, we don't do that as a sporting public, where to move quickly enough to change the rule, let alone retroactively, but to change the rule to where she'll be able to run in the full, you know, arsenal of events for which she is qualified at the Tokyo Olympics. It's just not going to happen. It's frustrating. It's frustrating even as the super casual every 4 year track and field fan or pay attention.
But that's
guy.
I mean, that's how a lot of us operate, right? Like people outside of that circle, we as general Americans, we just say, all right, you're wearing our colors here, you're getting ready to run, we're all in on you.
This isn't though the fourth alternate on discus. Like, she is a superstar. If there's one American sprinter you know right now, it might be Sha'Carri Richardson, and she's not going to the Olympics. So it's a bummer for a fan base. It's a bummer for someone who roots for Team USA in absolutely anything. But the conversation has begun. It might change in 4 years, and we'll lament as she hopefully is healthy and winning golds at wherever the next Olympics are. It might be LA, right? Is it LA in 2024?
I think it might be.
Or maybe it's 2028. I'm excited or relieved. Relieved is a better word, that she's 21 and not 31.
Yep.
And I don't know or claim to know the relative athletic lifespan in track and field. But at 31, you can be outdated in sports like tennis or gymnastics or football, certainly.
But we treat 31-year-olds in that league like they're old.
Right. But this is a woman who has challenged records from all-time greats. And you just lament the fact that she won't get to pad those stats here and start out what we hope is a decorated Olympic career.
And we hope that. And she said as much. She goes, I'm 21. I'm going to focus on myself right now, understanding that even if I don't get to compete, because she still could potentially in the 4x100-meter relay, there's a different selection process for that. But even if she doesn't get to compete this year, she knows there's more ahead. So we'll get to more of that and what the crux of this really is about. As we've talked about today, this feels like about more than just one athlete. What can actually come of this? Is, I think, the next big question. We'll try to answer that here on ESPN Radio. We'll do it after this word from 5-Hour Energy. Now, as we get ready for this weekend, you got sunglasses, you got sunscreen, you got beach towels, you got a cooler. Here's another summer essential, one that I just saw my friend Randy Scott using right before the show, 5-Hour Energy Shots. Listen, summer doesn't last forever, so make the most of it with alert, energized feeling of 5-Hour Energy. Do a radio show with it coursing through your veins.
Yes.
It comes in tons of fun summer flavors, tropical burst, watermelon, cherry, my personal favorite. Helped me out a lot in college. 5-Hour Energy Shots are the perfect travel companion, too. They're small, they're light, they're portable, and they take just seconds to go ahead and drink. For more information and to stock up for all your summer adventures, head over to 5hourenergy.com. That's 5hourenergy.com. More on the latest from U.S. Track and Field next on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Jhené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Randy Scott hanging out with you guys. We are efforting right now on the Goodyear Hotline. Travis Tigert, the CEO of the United States Anti-Doping Agency, as we've talked so much today about what's going on with Sha'Carri Richardson, USA Track and Field, and her serving a one-month suspension for a failed marijuana test heading into the Tokyo Games here. So we are efforting him, hopefully going to get to talk to him and see, Randy, if there's any way that we can really advance this conversation. Is there any recourse for the U.S. Anti-Doping Association going up against, you know, the WADA, the big governing body for all the countries heading into this, to change anything of what we've seen based on this recent mishap here?
So reading up on Travis Tigert, he's an impressive guy. He's a lawyer by trade, but also leaning into some of his career accomplishments, having taken over in 2007 the Lance Armstrong anti-doping investigation. I mean, he spearheaded that, so you can tell this is certainly a passion of his. I would argue, though, that there have to be thresholds for which you can measure, or against which you can measure athletes like, you know, habitual line steppers like Lance Armstrong versus a Sha'Carri Richardson who is grieving and going through that process. So,
yeah, legitimate performance enhancers, the blood doping that was rampant in cycling versus marijuana, and something, I mean, listen, Travis Tigert joined the USADA in 2002.
What he has seen
and the change that he has seen across the world has certainly been stark, and so I'd imagine his perspective on this would be very helpful in trying to figure out where we go from here. So again, efforting Travis Tigert, the CEO of the U.S. Anti-Doping anti-doping agency, hopefully coming up soon on Chiney and Golic Jr. In the meantime, Randy, we did have a basketball game played last night, and I got to tell you, I looked up on the calendar today because we know we got the Suns waiting in the wings for whoever comes out of the East. I felt like Joel Embiid at the end of game six, hunched over, exhausted, going, okay, I could use a night off because these late night NBA games have been destroying me.
I watched that. I only made it through the first half. I had SportsCenter AM duty this morning, so it was like, all right, that alarm clock at 3:30, which is sleeping in by my standards because I stayed over in Avon. But I saw the first half, and I saw a team in Milwaukee that knew what the heck they were going to do. And they knew that Atlanta couldn't stop it. Now, I'm not saying that the idea is we're going to get 30 from Brooke Lopez every night, but they knew that they could out-muscle and out-physical Atlanta inside. And it was up to Atlanta to adjust. And I think a lot of times, you know, in hockey, sometimes you talk about the home ice advantage being you get the last change.
Yep.
You know what I mean? You get the last, and that is a literal help. Well, in basketball, and last night specifically, Mike Budenholzer out-coached Nate McMillan. And he forced McMillan into being the one that had to make the mid-game adjustment. And it's not that for a lack of trying from McMillan. He just didn't have the players. He didn't have the horses to be able to do it. And at a certain point, I mean, listen, Lopez was 14 of 18 from the floor. These are high-percentage shots. He had 26 points in the paint alone for a guy who's a 7-footer who, by virtue of the league changing around him during his career, he had to develop an outside shot. And he got one hell of a nickname out of it, Splash Mountain. It's pretty great.
Big fan here. Disney guys, it's company, man.
Huge. Laughing place, all of it. Briar Patch. But now he goes back to his roots last night, and because of that, and because of Atlanta's inability, not unwillingness, inability to adjust to it, Milwaukee's in the driver's seat. They got to win one of two. My guess is it goes back to Milwaukee for game seven, but I wouldn't be surprised if it ends Saturday night in Atlanta.
Well, that's going to be interesting because I think that's going to be predicated in a lot of people's mind on one thing, Trae Young and what his status looks like. Malika Andrews, our ESPN NBA insider, was on SportsCenter at 6 o'clock with L. Duncan and talked about what the Hawks are looking for with their superstar.
For Trae Young, this is about pain tolerance and mobility. So while that is improving, he wasn't quite to that threshold where he was available and ready to play. They want Trae Young at nearly full strength, if not full strength. So he's going to continue to do that rehab. Watching him, he was definitely moving a little bit better. He was moving a little bit slowly, but he's working and progressing toward potentially being available to play in game six.
So that is the interesting part of this, Randy, because we've seen and had to really talk about so much of the gamesmanship surrounding injury during this postseason of when and how soon do you bring these stars back. This idea that Trae Young would even be close to 100% in game six with a bone bruise is sort of ludicrous to me.
Right.
But the right decision for them, Randy, to maybe say, all right, we know winning on the road's a lot tougher. The role players tend to step up there, even if that team doesn't have Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, hell, I could say from Nate McMillan, I see a great deal of logic in saying we're not going to rush Trae Young back in this game, even though Giannis is out on the other side, because, hell, our team shorthanded without Trae Young just beat that team with Giannis for part of the game in the game before that in game four. Where are you at on that as a sort of coaching chess move here?
I don't know that it's a coach. Man, I don't know that it's a coaching chess move as much as it is, and I'm trying to speak to your pre-show point about roster construction, roster development, because this feels like, and I'm not trying to dodge the question, so I'll preemptively apologize for that, but like this feels like a year where roster depth actually matters. I feel like there have been other years where if my stars are better than your stars, I'm going to win.
Yeah.
Over the course of seven games, that you know, water level is going to reach its point where my guys are better than your guys. This is more of a, I have more guys, period. Like, this is a strength in numbers year versus a star power year. I think Phoenix outlasted L.A. because Kawhi got hurt. I think Phoenix is here because they beat a depleted Lakers team because Anthony Davis got hurt. So they had their guys at their disposal. And right now, Atlanta's guy is Trae Young. And if he's healthy in game six, they win. They win. Especially, I don't think Giannis plays the rest of the series. We're talking about a Joel Embiid-type injury.
Yep.
This is a hyperextension of a knee here. If Trae plays, they win. If he doesn't, Atlanta does not have the small ball capability to make Milwaukee pay. Brook Lopez went off because Trae Young wasn't out there. Trae Young exposed Brook Lopez in game one. That's how they won in Milwaukee. No trade, no win for Atlanta. It's that simple.
So, Randy, you mentioned the team aspect of this because we did talk about this. This feels a lot like, and I think Jason Fitz brought this point up earlier in the week when he was on the show, that this feels a lot like the 2017 NFL playoffs where we looked around the Final Four and there weren't a bunch of high-paid $25-plus million, $30 million quarterbacks around there. I mean, Nick Foles ended up being the quarterback of the Super Bowl-winning team.
Yeah.
And I remember Sports Talk was dominated by this idea of, have we overvalued the quarterback position? Can you get away in a sport like the NFL with so many pieces and parts of having this? And it seemed ridiculous then, this notion that, yeah, we just have really thought way too much of this position overall. And since then, we've seen it borne out. And I would say even here that the strength of these teams has been commendable during this postseason. But if we're in a normal year where we're not having 10 All-Stars miss games over the course of a postseason, a record for the NBA, I have a feeling water's going to find its level even on that where, yeah, we've got stars on these teams and you've got built-out rosters, but at the end of the day, if you've got a healthy Brooklyn Nets team, if you've got a healthy Lakers team, we're probably having a different conversation right now.
We absolutely are. And I there have been years where Milwaukee has had the depth. And that's where, and I remember pre-playoff conversation, who do you like out of the East? Who do you like here? Whatever. It's like, well, Milwaukee's got depth, got depth. And their good wasn't good enough because Giannis wasn't there yet. Chris Middleton wasn't there yet. And there's some people who will still say that Middleton can't be your guy because they didn't win last night because of Middleton. They won because of Brooke Lopez. They won because Bobby Portis had 22 points.
I was going to say they won because they had four guys score at least 20 points and have five rebounds. The first time in 30 years that's happened.
They didn't have the hammer. They won by paper cuts. They were deep cuts, four guys and 20 points, but that was it was you know, death in strength in numbers, I should say. So, I worry about the legitimacy of the champion this season, and we talked about that as well.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put a preemptive asterisk on it. We'll see how we feel by whoever wins. But you talked about last year's bubble champion having an asterisk, not to de-justify the accomplishment, but more just to remember it for what it was, an entirely unique experience of an NBA season.
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, we always talk about lockout years in certain sports.
Yeah,
we acknowledge when a championship was won in a lockout year or the circumstances around there. And it's, again, I never want to devalue this accomplishment because most everyone was faced with similar. I won't say the same because some teams had deep bubble runs last year.
Right.
Others,
right.
And we've seen a lot of those. The attrition caught up. Others, not nearly as much of that. Different story, but everyone's weathered similar enough circumstances where there's value in the accomplishment, certainly, but it's drastically different. Last year was drastically different because we had a gap in a season and a bubble we played in, and this year we came back off way short notice, and we've seen it has had an effect, whether it's anecdotal or borne out in statistics, and I think to ignore that would be short-sighted. Says history needs the context that we have now if we're going to talk about these things. So, again, you can check out Game 6 Saturday in Atlanta. Coverage is going to be on ESPN Radio beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern with Mark Kestisher and John Barry. We are efforting, again, we are efforting Travis Tigert from the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency to talk more about what's going on with U.S. track and field right now. But coming up next, we talked about letting the dogs out this weekend. We'll take you to the man at the helm for one of the most important sporting events of the 4th of July weekend next on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
They say luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. But what happens when you throw in hot dogs?
Oh, okay.
This weekend is what happens.
You had my curiosity. Now you have my attention.
Jhené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Randy Scott with you guys. And as I've mentioned on this show, very excited this weekend. Got the call back in from the bullpen to head out with our friends from the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest from Major League Eating to go and be on the call for the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest this Sunday, the 4th of July, noon Eastern on ESPN for the men's contest on ESPN. Going to be taking place at Coney Island. And as a part of that, as always, myself, Jason Fitz, going to be on the call along with Richard Shea, who in addition to being one of the great voices of Major League Eating is also the president of Major League Eating with us. He is here giving us the straight talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. And Richard, I just got to ask first and foremost, how did you make the mistake twice of allowing me and Jason to come back at this contest?
Well, I was just about to say, Straight Talk, is that what we do on the 4th of July? You know, because you embrace it so hard, Mike. I mean, it's like, and really, I feel like every time I talk to Fitz, you know, Christmas morning for me is, you know, a cup of coffee, white woman's Instagram kind of thing on a rug by the fire. But I think Fitz embraces it more than any of us. And so we're stoked to have you back.
When you look at these two guys here, Richard, and you look at who's representing not only, you know, the event itself, but the energy behind it, the energy is going to be different this year. It's going to feel like getting back to normal. What's that like for you from a planning standpoint, from, you know, a celebration standpoint, in getting back to what this thing really is about?
It's a really positive step in the right direction. So when Mike and Fitz were there last year, it was a weird year. And we were in a box with no crowd and very few media, and it was quiet, but it was cool. But it lacked that sort of running of the bulls vibe that you typically have in the corner of Surfing Stillwell. So a major leap back to normal this year. But we won't be on the corner of Surfing Stillwell. We will have, you know, one thing you asked about planning, it's like every week we've been getting a different read on, so how many people can we have in there? When I first went out and scouted with Chris Ohlmeyer with ESPN, it was, you know, we had 2,000 fans. And then a week later, we had 3,000. And now we settled on 5, and then they opened up some additional seats. So there are a couple seats maybe still available. They just opened up another 1,000 or something. So you go to majorleagueeating.com and see if you can get in. But it's been a hassle, but it's definitely going to be great. And you know, I was talking to the eaters today. We had a weigh-in, and I was talking to Joey and some of the other eaters, and they're like, as much as they enjoyed the AC, they really prefer the crowd. They're like, the crowd gives me the vibe, and it buoys me.
Chenan Gold Jr. here talking to Richard Shea, president of Major League Eating, as we get ready for the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest. And you mentioned the changes, Richard. We were there last year indoors, and there was so much conversation around the event itself for the eaters. Would that controlled environment inside be something that helped get more hot dogs down? We saw record-breaking performances from Mickey Sudo, the top-ranked female eater, from Joey Chestnut in that regard. No Mickey this year. She's going to be in the broadcast booth with us as she is pregnant, getting ready to welcome her first child into the world. So what are you expecting as far as the pace of this thing now that we get back outside? Do you think we can jump past some of those indoor numbers from last year?
I mean, those numbers, dude, they're so high. Vicky had a personal best and a female world record of 48.5. Joey had a personal best and a male record at 75. I've said this before, obviously. I was around when Kobayashi did 50, and I thought that was the mountaintop, you know? And that was a 12-minute contest. Remember, we found this old rules from Nathan's when they were redoing Nathan's after Sandy, and we restored the contest to its 10-minute length. So, you know, Joey's wins have been in 10 minutes, two fewer minutes than what we were doing for a long time. So I got to figure 75, the mountaintop. DraftKings put the over-under at 73.5. I actually kind of like it, but I couldn't tell you which way to go on it. You know, it's like, again, it's like, you know, this is, you know, if you use a sports reference, you know, like, you know, if you think of a race, you know, like track and field or like, you know, an IM in swimming, it's all about those first couple laps. So, you know, Mike, it's the DPMs, the dogs per minute. That's what I watch at the beginning of the contest. If Joey's between 8 and 11 and it sustains for a few minutes, you know you're going to see something.
It's going to be incredibly special. The dogs per minute, how fast the dogs were going down, how they're cooked, All these things that I learned talking to these eaters, being up close and personal to it last year, matter so much and are going to be on display as we head into one of my favorite weekends of the year, something that's become a staple on the 4th of July weekend. And when you think of Major League Eating, you think of Joey Chestnut, you think of Kobayashi, but I think you also think of Richard Shea, of George Shea, the voice introducing everyone, all going to be on full display as we head into this contest again, coming up Sunday, July 4th. You don't want to miss it. As Richard said, still tickets available, some on MajorLeagueEating.com if you want to try and get out there and be a part of all the action. Richard, we appreciate your time so much. I'm looking forward to getting down there, getting with you guys, and really doing this thing right this weekend.
Yeah, I'm psyched to see you. And let me add that we have a new wrinkle this year. So Badlands Booker, the chugging king, and former competitive eating superstar, Badlands Booker is going to chug a gallon of lemonade to kick this thing off, and that's going to be a lot of fun. But fortunately, we have Bounty on board, so if we need the quicker picker up, they're there. But definitely a new wrinkle for our show, Badlands at the top with a gallon chug.
I promise you, if Badlands is involved, you don't want to miss a minute of what is going on. An all-time legend getting ready to chug some lemonade to kick off one of America's favorite days. Richard, you're the best. Thank you so much, sir. I'll see you soon, all right?
No doubt. I'll see you soon. Happy 4th.
Awesome stuff from President of Major League Eating, Richard Shea, joining us on the Goodyear Hotline. Coming up next, though, we will get a chance to talk to Travis Tigert, the CEO of the U.S. Anti-Doping Administration, about what's gone on in USA Track and Field today and where we can go from here. Next on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
And Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Randy Scott with you guys here on ESPN Radio. And we've talked so much today about USA Track and Field, about Sha'Carri Richardson testing positive for marijuana, accepting a one-month suspension that's going to put her Olympic future in doubt for this year. And we've talked so much about it. Very fortunate now on the Goodyear Hotline to be able to talk with someone, a part of the governing body that helps make some of these decisions. Travis Tigert with us now, the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency CEO, joins us on the Goodyear Hotline. And Travis, we appreciate you making time on such short notice here. You've seen so much of the response today. Has this surprised you, the backlash for so many people against this ruling by the governing bodies here for the Olympics?
Yeah. Hey, Mike and Randy, thanks for having me on. You know, listen, it's a really tough and sympathetic case. You know, as my statement said, when we had to handle it when it was reported positive to us because the rules, you know, gave us no choice whatsoever. And she, you know, acknowledged the situation and did treatment as we, you know, worked out with her and gave her the absolute minimum of 1 month that we could, but recognizing that also, you know, automatically disqualified her victory in the 100 meters. You know, we were heartbroken by it because, you know, we're not here as an anti-doping organization to, you know, deal with recreational or non-performance or non-health threatening situations. But, you know, we have to follow the rules of the World Anti-Doping Agency, which are the global rules that apply around the world. And so our hands were absolutely tied that we had to move forward, whether we agree the outcome in tough cases or not. So, you know, our you know, response to it was probably a lot like people that we've heard responses from. You know, on the other hand, we have heard athletes who say, look, we all know the rules and, you know, y'all, we appreciate you doing the job even when it's tough, and we expect the referee to be fair, even if it's a high profile situation and even if the outcome stinks. You know, the referee's job is to enforce the rules fairly, and that's what we had to do.
Looking at the USADA's obligation or at least relationship with and close ties with the World Anti-Doping Organization, like I'm interested, Travis, from a move, I don't know, from a change standpoint, what avenues there are moving forward, understanding retroactively it's not an option right now for Sha'Carri, but moving forward in an effort where, or at least in a country like the United States, where now 19 states allow for recreational use of marijuana, including where the trials were held themselves in the state of Oregon, it doesn't figure to trend backward. It feels like more states are going to join those ranks. And at what point does the discussion need to be had with the World Anti-Doping Agency to say, listen, this is an antiquated set of standards to which we're holding our athletes?
Yeah, listen, great question. And we've been pushing. It's funny you ask it because people around the world would tell you they're sick and tired of hearing Travis Tigert and Edwin Moses, who, you know, is our chair emeritus, and Phil Dunn, a three-time Olympian, pushing for change at WADA, because we've been pushing for change for many, many years on this issue, as well as even other issues that, you know, unfairly, in our opinion, railroad athletes unnecessarily, like we've seen with Brenda Martinez or other athletes who have tested positive from contaminated medication or meat that they've eaten. And so absolutely, we're going to continue pushing. You know, we're in touch with the federal government. Our federal government has the seat at the World Anti-Doping Agency table. We don't. We have nothing other than our soft diplomacy and our voice in the newspapers, and we've supported over the years. And in fairness to WADA, they have come a long way from where they were and did that before any other organizations had done it. They still can go a little bit farther in our mind to potentially have a better solution. You can look at what we've done along in our UFC program, which is not bound by the World Anti-Doping Agency's code. So we have flexibility in our Olympic movement. Given the global nature of it, and it all falls as required under WADA, we have to follow their rules. We have no formal say or seat at the table in what ultimately they put in place. But we've been advocating for them to treat it as they, you know, have evolved, which is as a substance of abuse. And that's how it is today in 2021. It wasn't like that previously. It was much more punitively handled. We've also supported when they went up to 180 nanograms as a positivity threshold. So it's not any level. It's a pretty moderate to high level that has to be in your system. And I think the reasoning, as they would explain if they were on your show, is, you know, maybe from a performance enhancing standpoint. But look, we're not nobody's really buying into that, understandably, but mainly from a health and safety standpoint. And that's how we've dealt with it in our UFC program, to say, look, as long as you're not endangering yourself or reckless when you get in, you know, to fight in the UFC, we're gonna need more than just being over the threshold for it to be considered a case that results in a punishment. We might try to seek treatment if you need some counseling, if you're dealing with some underlying issues, or if you're just a recreational smoker, that's fine. That doesn't impact sport. As long as, you know, we all can imagine, just like drugged driving rules, right? We don't want a cyclist stoned in the middle of a Peloton. We just saw a terrible crash at the beginning of the Tour de France caused by a sign. Yep. Can you imagine if people were high, you know, at 70 miles an hour going down a mountain? You don't want that either.
Absolutely. Travis Tiger with us here, U.S. Anti-Doping Agency's CEO with us. But it, certainly that's a scenario that obviously no one would endorse there. But you brought up the idea of it being viewed as a performance enhancer, which is one of the three criteria listed by the World Anti-Doping Agency for something that winds up on the banned substance list. And it seems like your opinion of that is similar to a lot of ours, where that seems... it's sort of nonsensical at this point based on what we know. So what is the process like for looking at and amending something like that? You mentioned this falls under WADA, but what can you guys do as far as starting a conversation about that in particular, which based on what we know seems very dated?
Yeah, and listen, that discussion happens every year, and the world just went through that discussion. And what I would say is there are scientists out there, and there's been things written from scientists that some may disagree with, and I'm not here defending that. I think it's what's the policy and what's fair from a policy standpoint if we can accept the science. And I think what we've done in our UFC program is the right policy. You know, others at WADA can, you know, decide what science they want to rely on, and ultimately they have the decision-making authority ultimately on the policy. We provide, as all stakeholders can, including all sport in the United States, unions in the United States, and remember, our pro players play in the Olympics and are subject to these very rules. So all of us should put in, you know, feedback through the formal process. Again, none of us have a seat at the table. Our federal government does, for now at least, although they're not on the executive committee anymore, which is a whole different problem at the WADA level that we've been screaming and yelling about for the last 5 years. But we've put in, you know, our position on the policy around it, and like other things, whether it's an altitude tent or something along those lines that, look, may have some performance enhancement, may, you know, not be dangerous to health all the time, you know, in the right conditions, it shouldn't be, you know, prohibited. And, you know, I think we all agree, potentially from a health and safety standpoint, if it gets to a certain level and someone's inebriated and reckless and causing harm to others,
absolutely,
then that's a different case. And that's how we've dealt with it in our UFC program, to ensure health and safety, but not, you know, attempt to be punitive or in any other way try to regulate some sort of, you know, non-performing, non-health risk. Yep. That's really just some recreational situation.
No,
and we think that's the better policy, but we don't control it, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that seems to be the understanding here. Travis, we appreciate you taking the time to explain that process to you here. We're up against it now. Thank you so much for this on short notice, and I'm sure you will be asking plenty more on this coming up here very soon. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, sir. I appreciate the candor there. I reading between the lines, is like, listen, no one's buying into the performance-enhancing element of marijuana.
Yep.
Like, we're getting that from the CEO of the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency.
Yeah, Travis Tiger, their CEO, essentially saying, well, this is out of our hands. This is the World Anti-Doping Agency. Lots more on this to dive into. Spain and Fitz will take you through it next on ESPN Radio.
The Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.